Gentlemen, everyone, this week we're gonna keep it brief as we find a hidden treasure in the Midrash. And we're going to do for Parshas Pinchas, we're gonna do part from Midrash Rabbah, Parsha Chaf Aleph, Psikta Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis, a little bit of both, and see a theme that connects a little bit. So the Midrash starts off speaking about the greatness of the Chachma and Sidkus of the Benos Tzlafchad, and it says, right, they approach Moshe, obviously, asking, that they're, you know, about having a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Their father Tzlafchad passed away, and they want to be able to inherit the land, even though they are not they're not men. And it says that Hashem arranged for it that they would come to Moshe, so that Moshe wouldn't get arrogant that he separated from his wife for 40 years, right? Because this is, I'll explain that Moshe was actually separated from his wife for 40 years so that he would be able to be constantly in a state of tahara, in a state of purity, and always ready to receive nevuah from Hashem. And therefore, he had to actually remain celibate, which is actually a unique thing in Judaism. And, you know, really a very exceptional thing. And Moshe is the primary example of that exception, that he was separated from his wife for 40 years. So lest he get arrogant, so he was approached, Hashem arranged it, that he'd be approached by the Benos Tzlafchad, because they too were unmarried their whole lives, because the Midrash says they didn't find suitable husbands, and it says they weren't even commanded. I'm just going to do it outside today, so taking a look at the Midrash inside, just to keep it brief. But the Midrash says that they weren't even commanded to it's unclear, right? So it says that they didn't get married, they were unmarried their whole lives, because they didn't find suitable husbands, and they were not commanded. So what does that mean? They weren't commanded. So if you take a look at some of the first from the Midrash Rabbah, so they have a different understanding. Eitz Yosef says that they weren't commanded to stay single, meaning, unlike Moshe, who was commanded to stay single, right? He was specifically commanded to separate from his wife. They were not like that. They were not commanded to stay single. They did it by choice. That's the way Eitz Yosef understands this line of the Midrash, that they were not commanded. But the Matnas Kahuna says that they were that not commanded to get married in general. Right? He's understanding the opinion in the Rishonim that it's the obligation of men to get married and not women. Obviously, men need the help of women to get married. But it's not an obligation to them. So they were not commanded to get married. That's what they just said. That's how Manas Kahuna understands it. So just let's take a look at that and try to think that through a little bit more. According to Eitz Yosef, this last point is impressive because it means that they did by choice, but Moshe only did by instruction, right? That's a reason. Okay, we have another question that we have to ask. We're not going to address now, which is like, why is there even a havamina? You know, why is there even a thought that Moshe is going to be arrogant about the fact that he was, you know, celibate for 40 years? Why would he be arrogant about that? Where does that come from? We're not going to address that now, but the way that the Eitz Yosef understands the comment of the Midrash, the way he was kind of humbled and put into his place so that he wouldn't get arrogant or guess kept in check is that he was approached by the Benos Tzlafchad, who did the same thing that he did, but unlike Moshe, who did it only by instruction, they did it even by choice. Now, even though there's a principle in general that the Gemara says that the reward of someone who is a mitzvah of Oseh and a mitzvah of Oseh, that someone who is commanded to do something and somebody who is not commanded to do something and opts into doing it, so the reward is greater for the one who was commanded, not for the one who is not commanded. While that is true over here, you could say that, you know, even though it's true that the reward is greater, but if you want to praise somebody and show their greatness, the fact that someone opts in, there definitely is a mila to that. So anyway, that's how they just understand it. But it's according to the Matnas Kahuna, we have to try to figure out what this means. That if the point is that they were not commanded to, meaning, then the way Matnas Kahuna understands it, they weren't even commanded to get married. Like, you know, what is the mila? Right? According to Matnas Kahuna, that they weren't commanded in the first, that they weren't commanded, you know, the mitzvah peru ravu, they're not commanded to get married and to multiply. Women are not. So what does that have to do with you know, them separating from their husbands. That's being even less of a reason, right? It sounds like it would be even easier to separate from, you know, getting married without a mitzvah. So that, like, how does this promotion in this place, right? Like, meaning, let's put words into their mouth. Let's say the benos Moshe would say, "Hey, I'm so great. I separated from my wife for 40 years," and then benos Tzlacha would say, "Hey, you know, we also didn't get married," and he would say, "Right, but you don't have a mitzvah too, and I do have a mitzvah too in general, and I still did it." So, what's their response? You could suggest that the lack of there being a mitzvah is not a reason that would make it more or make it easier to you know remain single, but rather is an indicator of how difficult it is. And some explain that the reason that women are not commanded for slaves, right? That's a good question. Meaning, assuming that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of marriage and procreation, and rather they just assist the men in the process. Why is that so? One of the several answers that is suggested for this is that women don't need this commandment because it's naturally something that women have a natia towards and they feel a desire for it. Obviously, it's not for all women, but women by and large have this naturally ingrained desire to be married and have children, and they don't need the commandment. And if that's indeed the case, so I guess it would make sense a little bit, or it would make a lot of sense, that having the mitzvah is an indicator that you don't have this ingrained desire for it. Meaning that if you don't have the mitzvah, that's because it's something that's naturally very important to you, that you don't have to be commanded for it because you already want it. And if that's the case, then the Benos Tzlachot are saying, what the Midrash is saying about them, that they were not even commanded in Peru Revu, meaning they didn't need to be commanded because they so badly wanted to be married and have children. And even so, they still remained single because they couldn't find anybody who was, they couldn't find suitable partners, and it was more appropriate for them to remain single until they would find the most suitable partners. So that could be shot in the Matnas Kahuna's understanding of this midrash. Anyway, we move to the next midrash, which gives two pshatim in why Moshe didn't know the answer. Right? You would expect Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days and 40 nights learning the entire Torah, and Hashem gave it to him, Kakala So, he gave it to him completion. So why didn't Moshe have the answer? And the midrash over here in Psik Yud Beis has two answers. One of them is that he, again, on his level, arrogantly stated previously that they should bring any challenging question to him. Right, earlier on Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's first appointing people to work under him, so he says, any, right, this is Parshas Yisro, I believe, maybe here as well, whenever there are challenging questions, bring the hard ones to me. So that was, again, at Moshe's level, a little bit arrogant, and he felt a drop of arrogance. And again, we know that Moshe is one of me called Adam, the most humble person to ever live. But there's a little bit of a shemitza of arrogance. And because of that, Hashem, hid the answer from him to humble him a little bit. Now, before we get to the second into the Midrash, I just want to point out that this could actually explain the previous Midrash, that since the Benos Tzlachot, that was part of a response to Moshe's arrogant comment, so the Kapara needed to be from people who are even more impressive than Moshe. Right, that the Benos Tzlachot, we read the previous midrash and we saw there's something about arrogance, and Hashem wanted to humble Moshe, and we didn't really know why. But if you look at it in the light of this midrash in Yud Beis, so we see that he, according to at least for this first shot, he said something that was a little bit arrogant, and he needed to be humbled. So now we have to try to figure out how are we going to humble Moshe? How is it possible to find somebody who can outdo Moshe in basically any area of Kedusha, in any area of Ruchnias? Who can outdo Moshe? So perhaps it was in the area of marital precious. This was something that was unique for Moshe. It was a unique commandment to abstinence something that other men should not do in general. We know, you know, Chazal point out that another Navi who are faulted for not having been married. We know the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur can't do the Avodah unless he's married, and it's an opinion that they even have a backup wife just in case his wife passes away. So we see that it's really something that's unique. And this is something unique about Moshe, and this is something that's a big praise of Moshe, that this was something that Moshe had. So in order to humble Moshe, you need to bring somebody who outdoes him, and based on the previous Midrash, indeed, the Bnei Slavchad were able to outdo him somehow, as well, in some way as well, whether you take the Eitz Yosef, or that it's more impressive because they did it by choice, or by the Matnas Kahuna, it was more impressive because they didn't have a mitzvah, meaning they had just a natural desire to be married and remained single. So it makes sense with these two midrashim together that there's a lesson of being humbled. Moshe is being humbled for making a comment with a slight hint of arrogance, and he's humbled by being brought before people who actually are able to outdo him in one particular way. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says basically, "I'm at the top of the knowledge chain, and I'm the leader." And indeed, he was, and he was the greatest person in the nation. But he was humbled by having people who are brought before him who are actually greater in some way. I'll just conclude with the second pshat, because I think it's more complimentary. The second is that the officers of tens didn't know the answer and brought it to the officers of 50, and they, in humility, kept bringing it to the higher authority. And when it was brought to Moshe, he saw that everybody humbly asked their superiors, and he actually knew the answer. He didn't want to take credit for all of them. He didn't want everyone to look at him and say, "Wow, no one knew, and Moshe Rabbeinu knew." Therefore, he also asked his superior. He also asked Hashem. And this is why Moshe answered the question. So over here, right, the question of why didn't Moshe know the answer, according to this pshat in the Midrash, he did know the answer. He just wanted to ask Hashem, because everybody else asked their superiors, and he also, out of his humility, wanted to ask his superiors. And this is more in line with the Moshe we're familiar with, of Anav Mikol Adam, that he's the most humble person. And it's just also interesting to see that if you look in this Midrash, there are two diametrically opposed reasons. One of them is that it's due to Moshe's arrogance at his level, and the other one is due to his humility. And again, the previous Midrash as well, it seems to be some little hint of arrogance in Moshe Rabbeinu. And obviously the arrogance we're talking about is not any arrogance that we could ever, you know.
One interesting thing to take out of this, that there seems to be this theme of Moshe's arrogance or his humility, is that, you know, Moshe, as we noted a couple of times, was really marked as unique for his humility, being an incredibly high level of humility. Yet we see that there was some sort of struggle to some degree with arrogance, which just shows that, you know, no matter what midos we have, no one is perfect. Even the greatest person who is the best in one area also has arrogance, and also that level of arrogance is measured on a different scale. Meaning, if Moshe is, you know, understood in the context of his humility, then even the slightest breach, kechut ha'sa'ara, is considered arrogance to some degree, and he needs to, in a sense, be put back in his place. So I think that there's definitely a lot more, hidden treasures buried in this midrash, but I think we were able to bring out a whole bunch of interesting ha'aros and to see the theme weaving between at least these two midrashim and midrash rabbah. Midrash Hashem, we should be zochet to internalize these lessons of and these hidden treasures, to be able to properly balance our humility and arrogance, and be able to perfect all of our midos.